Floridian of the Astro Command, and when I want to know who's visiting the third planet of the star I saw, I listen to UFOs Tonight every Saturday night, 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, according to the Earthlings, on CRN, the Cable Radio Network.
Where TV and radio collide. Exclusively on cable TV, CRN, the Cable Radio Network, the radio channel.
UFO News and Media Update for February 11, 1995. Several residents of the Southern California city of Anaheim saw a UFO on Thursday morning. Kids on their way to school saw it, a school attendance clerk saw it, even a former military pilot saw it. It wasn't your classic saucer by any means. Three witnesses, in fact, called the thing a misshapen lump. The former pilot, Chris Christensen, said it looked like a Model T that got hit by a freight train. Still another witness said it was a black cylinder rotating in the sky. Whatever it was, the UFO did not get reported to the usual agencies, such as the FAA or the local police. In trying to determine the nature of the object, even Disneyland officials checked around. They stated later that no one who might have had something in the air did so that morning. Witnesses were perplexed by what they saw. It hovered soundlessly. But no one is claiming that it was extraterrestrial. Other UFO sightings occurred recently in Muskegon, Michigan. Last year, Muskegon was the site of a considerable flap. During that incident, the UFO's signature was picked up on Weather Service radar. This time, the mysterious lights were seen by only a handful of witnesses. Today's media note. Flying saucers have been used by Madison Avenue to sell everything from beer to insurance services. But it's still hard to sell the news media on UFOs. Yet every once in a while, some straight news delivery slips through. Congratulations to the Orange County Register for their factual, sober reporting on the Anaheim UFO. That's it for now. Thanks for listening. I'm Vicki Ecker. Now, back to Don, Dwight, and their guest, Larry Fawcett, on UFOs Tonight.
And we are back. Okay, Larry.
Yes.
We've got all the phone lines lit up. Looks like a lot of people want to start talking to you. But before I go to the phones, did you have anything else you wanted to say about what we were talking about before the break?
About Roswell?
Yeah.
I'm getting old. I'm losing my train of thought here. I don't know if you know this or not, but there is so much information out there in Roswell that that point to the direction that whatever crashed there was very exotic, and it certainly was a weather balloon. Barry and I, once the book Clear Intent came out, we were contacted by the pilot that flew that thing out in the crates from Roswell to Coswell and then on to Wright Pat. And, you know, The guards that were around that crate for a balloon, certainly, you know, they wouldn't have done that for a weather balloon or a radar reflecting device, you know. That's basically, I believe Roswell is an exciting case. I believe pay dirt is at the end of any investigation that's going in that direction, and I think everybody should focus in that area. I really do.
Right. Well, it's the only case in about 25 years that has garnered overt government interest and response. And
you know,
I'm speaking specifically about Representative Steve Schiff.
Sure.
And the General Accounting Office.
Sure. And you know, for these people that are sitting back and taking pop shots at the investigators that are looking in this thing just because somebody has changed this story a little bit or didn't tell the whole truth because he didn't want to let it out that he was dating the nurse or whatever, you know. That's human factor, you know. that doesn't take away from the events that occurred there.
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely. And the one thing that we have to remember, Larry, and you as a retired police officer, myself as a medically retired police officer, anytime we've ever investigated any case, specifically a traffic accident, for heaven's sake, if you have more than one witness there, you're going to get several different types of testimonies.
That's
because
correct, yeah.
Each person perceives the incident a little bit differently.
Right. 100% right.
Okay, let's take some phone calls. Let's go to Springfield, Virginia. We've got Ernie on there from Media General. Good evening, Ernie, and welcome to UFOs Tonight.
Hey, how's it going?
Just fine.
You guys have a great show. I've been listening to it for about a month now, and I can't get enough of this stuff.
Well,
great.
I'm glad to hear it.
Great.
I have a few things here. Just some advice and some information, maybe. How do you guys feel about the Tim Goods work?
Above Top Secret?
Above Top Secret and Alien Contact.
Above Top Secret is, some of it is very good. Alien Contact is a little difficult for me.
Uh-huh.
That was my feeling. I felt that he went a little too far in the second book, but there was a lot of very, very good information in Above Top Secret.
Above Top Secret was a very good book. As a matter of fact, I also recommend Above Top Secret to people looking for legitimate information. However, just like anybody else, Tim Good got snookered in some of that information. He had a rather extensive part in there about an alleged former Air Force pilot by the name of Mel Noel, who turns out to have been quite a fraud. As a matter of fact, I did a major expose on Mel Noel, a.k.a. Guy Kirkwood, as never having even served in the military, much less been an Air Force pilot intercepting UFOs. So, you know, it's just a word of caution to any investigator. Be very careful of your facts before you release them.
But a lot of the documents that he brought forth, the Sarbacher, the Smith documents, that's startling and wonderful stuff. And it has, and very little investigation has really been done about it since. I mean, I think it's right there in 52, between 47 and 53, and there's a lot of investigation that could go on by other UFO investigators to open that stuff up. It's good stuff.
Have you read the Alan Watts book?
What is that?
What's the title of that?
I'm trying to remember now. In Search of UFOs, I believe is what it's called. It goes pretty heavily into the propulsion systems and things of that nature.
No, afraid I haven't heard.
Okay.
No.
And let's see. How about the new Bud Hopkins thing? I was reading on the, I think it was the internet, about this woman who was abducted out of a 12-story apartment in New York.
Yeah, Linda Napolitano.
Yeah. I read some rather scathing things from some of the MUFON investigators.
Mm-hmm.
What's the word on the street on that?
Well, the case itself has a lot of questions. A number of people have gone out on a limb about this particular case, indicating that a very high-level United Nations official had observed this case.
Walt Andrus.
Walt Andrus of MUFON, as a matter of fact, is one of the people that indicated this.
Right.
Now, we're aware of who this UN official is, and he denies that he was there. But there are a lot of unanswered questions about this case, and I think that that all the people involved in investigating it should have kept it much closer to the vest until they completed their investigation. Mm-hmm. Larry, would you agree with that?
Sure, 100%.
Yeah.
And the name of the game here is that there are some things that are true and some things that are not, and it's all out there with the same vested interest. It's all being pushed forward with the same force, and it's very, very difficult to sort it out.
And that's why you got to be very careful with the data you receive, not only from people that are giving you information, but from the government itself.
Oh, absolutely, because part of the game is to do precisely that and keep you confused.
Sure, that's counterintelligence moves, you know.
Right.
Well, okay, Ernie.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And I love your show. And Mr. Fawcett, I'm going to be picking your book up tomorrow.
Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot.
Keep those eyes pointed upwards.
You bet.
Okay. Let's go to Fort Collins, Colorado. We've got Kevin on the line. Good evening, Kevin.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Just fine.
Larry, fantastic on your work, but nice to know that an ex-police officer is taking that step. And that leads me into my big first question, man. Why can't we get something together? Why can't all these big UFO name people who are studying it and whatnot who care so much, why can't we get together as one big group and make this information come out? I know back in the 40s they could debunk so easily, and they could just tell you one thing, we'll pull your license, forget it, you don't have a job anymore. Nowadays it's not like that. I mean, you can't lose your job over forming a group and seeking information on this, and it seems like we're not all getting together, meaning police officers that you say are, you know, curious about this and believe in this, and military pilots and civilians as well, and civilian organizations who care about this. Why can't we all get focused and just storm the doors?
Really? So you want to get a grassroots movement going here?
I think there's a lot of people with high authority that if they got together and it's already going on. They've done this much to us, meaning the government. Why can't we put our foot down?
Kevin, you've had people like Barry Goldwater try it.
Yes, I know.
You've had a lot of people in high positions attempt to do it. Some have been incredibly discredited. Some have been destroyed. People have been destroyed. And there is something else. I have to tell you, as amazing as it may seem to people like you and I, and Don, there are people who just don't care about this. Most of America, we have sat across from ladies on airplanes when we've talked about this subject. They say, "Well, so what?"
Yes, I know.
That's it, and that's it. You've got to have what I think they say: 49% of the American public believes that there's something up there, but do they care? That's not the question.
Yeah.
And most of them don't.
Yeah. Well, Larry, let me ask you this.
Sure.
The abduction cases that are going on.
Right.
Do we do extensive stakeouts? I mean, can't we see these things coming? Can we be part of what's happening when they come in for the abduction?
Well, I know some of the groups tried that. The problem is you can't pinpoint when it's going to happen, you know?
Yeah.
Those that are being abducted and not giving the investigate as well, it's going to happen tomorrow at 8 o'clock, you know, be there. It just don't happen like that.
Yeah.
And the abduction.
And it's too bad. But you're right in a sense that the problem we have today in the UFO field is that everybody is fighting one another.
Yeah, I mean,
we're not.
That's really what I
see.
It's like who can put out the most current information in the best-selling book? BS, man. We got to get together. This has been going on for so long. I've read the Roswell books from different accounts, and I mean, this is in your face.
See, unfortunately, the news media is sitting on the biggest story of a lifetime, and they won't move in it. These guys are the shakers.
You can't count on those people. Talk radio is the greatest wave to hit.
They can make this thing move if they wanted to, you know.
But Larry, for them to do that, Larry, would mean to they would just be caught with their pants down.
Well, you've got to remember also that there's a lot of government connections into the papers also.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, they pull some of the strings.
Well, as I say, anybody who read the William Broad article on the Roswell incident on the front of the New York Times knows that they're lockstep and jump with the government.
As much as I would love to just keep breezing along on this particular line of conversation, we've got to take another break. So we're going to do the very thing, even as I speak. Kevin.
Yes.
Thank you for your call.
Thanks, Kevin. Keep listening. There's a lot of people behind you on this.
Okay. Keep listening and keep those eyes pointed skyward, Kevin.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Bye.
All righty. We'll be back in just a moment. My name is Don Ecker. The show is UFOs Tonight, and Mr. Dwight Schultz is in here keeping this thing on track. So listen to these words, and we'll be back. And we are back with my special guest tonight, Mr. Larry Fawcett. Larry, let's take some more phone calls.
Sure.
Let's see. We've got Patrick from Escondido on Dimension Cable. Good evening, Patrick.
Hello, Don.
What's on your mind?
Well, great show tonight, Don.
Well, thank you.
I'd like to say to Larry, Larry Fawcett, I haven't read your book, but I know that some of the stuff you're talking about in here is definitely legit, because back in 1977, a guy that I was stationed with had come from Loring, Maine, and he told us about this incident. He worked in the WSA at Loring and described this whole thing, or parts of it anyway. He was kind of reticent to discuss it, but he told a couple of us about it. So that was real interesting. And I wanted to know too. These things seem to be following Phil around because Phil and I were stationed together at RAF Bentwaters in the UK.
You were in Bentwaters.
Yeah.
Yep.
And we de-roast out, Phil de-roast out long before the Bentwaters incident occurred, but he was there for the incident at Loring. And it turned out I de-roast out 5 months before I was at Bentwaters 3 years, but I de-roast out 5 months before the event occurred there. And I was wondering if you had found any kind of a paper trail on the Bentwaters incident.
Oh, yeah, because we were actually the first ones to turn the Holt document, which led us into Bentwaters originally.
Mm-hmm.
I had been dealing with the base commander. I think his name was Chapman or something like that.
Well, there was a Colonel Williams who was wing
Williams,
commander.
Williams, okay, yeah, Williams. Yeah. No, but it wasn't him that sent me my first Freedom of Information Act request there, I asked if anything occurred out there because of the information we were getting back here in America. Mm-hmm. And I was told by the commander at that time that no such thing had occurred.
Right.
Then the second letter, I fired another letter request back to him. The second letter comes up because I threatened him with a court action. The second letter came up, stated that although some strange activity occurred outside of the base itself,
mm-hmm.
And that was sort of the jargon in the note, which led us on to say, well, at first they were denying it. Now they're saying,
right.
Yeah, something happened here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's got to be a paper trail.
They later said they were rabbit burrows, Larry.
Well, I had some long talks, long distance and big phone bills with Holt at that time when he was up there. And believe it or not, he helped me out quite a bit.
Yeah. I know that the local police, the British police, investigated the incident as well in Rendlesham Forest.
Right.
They were out there taking measurements and so forth.
I'm
sorry, Doc.
Go ahead, Larry.
The problem with that was once we surfaced that document, we mm-hmm. wanted to keep it secret for one reason, because we didn't want the Air Force covering their rear end and hiding other documents.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem, what happened is, I had sent that document out to England to two researchers as a help for them. Specifically in the letter that I sent to them, I told them, please do not let the press know about this, because just basically what I just said, I didn't want the military covering their backside but getting rid of all the documentation they had on it. And sure enough, I pick up the newspaper and there's the whole story in there in the document. So that blew our plan at what, what we were trying to do.
Patrick, we're going to be doing a program on Bentwaters very soon. As a matter of fact, a gentleman whom I've never had on this program before was one of the security police there.
Is that the staff sergeant that was?
Well, I'm just going to say that we're talking to him right now, and he's willing
uh-huh.
to come on the program in the very near future.
All right, so, I'll be looking forward to that.
So stay tuned.
Okay.
And I've got to move along now because we've got all these lines lit up and there are other folks waiting to talk. But thank you for your call.
Okay,
and keep looking
that up.
Okay, we're going to go to Dave out in Lancaster, who's joining us on satellite.
Hey, how you doing today?
Just fine, Dave. What's on your mind?
Well, I wanted to find out if you heard any information about Ben Rich, which used to be the former chief of Lockheed.
Yes, as a matter of fact, we talked about Ben Rich extensively several weeks ago.
Yeah, he passed away just recently.
Yes.
He was, I had a chance to talk to him, and he was talking about the new radar that has been brainstorming at Lawrence Livermore, and that Tom Edwin had just developed for the DOE for their new 412 helicopter.
Yeah.
And it's supposed to be put on their helicopter sometime in the next couple of weeks out here at the air base. And I was driving yesterday by the air base, and they had it out of the, I guess what they call the secured area. And this thing's totally black. And it's got a delta wing on the side of it. And I was just wondering if maybe this has something to do with UFO sightings. I don't know. Not much into UFOs.
Mm-hmm.
I'm more into government cover-up, that type of thing.
Right.
And I just wondered if you'd heard anything about it.
No, I haven't. Larry, have you?
No, in fact, I couldn't hear what he was saying, Don.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, there's a very bad phone connection here.
Sorry about that.
Well, we can just barely understand you. But Ben Rich, we had John Andrews on this program.
Oh, really?
Who had had some correspondence with Ben Rich, and Don read one of those letters of Ben Rich to John Andrews, in which Ben Rich said he believed in UFOs, both extraterrestrial and humankind, but he called the extraterrestrial UFOs unfunded opportunities.
Yeah, Ben was good about that.
Yes, and he said, be careful because in both areas there are charlatans.
That's true. Ben was, he was a believer in it.
Yes. Oh, yes.
He never really approved or denied anything that the R&D facility was doing.
Well, with his job, he couldn't.
No.
I mean, he was continually working under extensive security regulations.
Oh, yeah, and then when he took a trip over to the Soviet area over there, the CIA was afraid they were going to take him.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I could just imagine what the CIA was thinking. Okay, well, I just wanted to see if you knew anything about that.
All right, Dave, thank you for your call, and please keep listening.
Sure enough.
Okay. We're going to go to, let me see, we've got Loman from Orange County on United Artists. Good evening.
Hello.
Good evening.
Hi. I'd like to know about the UFO sighted in Anaheim.
Okay. Yeah, as a matter of fact, Vicki did her media update at 10 o'clock Pacific time on that very thing, the Anaheim sighting.
Yeah, well, I just tuned in here.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Okay, the Orange County Register, I believe it was yesterday or the day before his paper, had an extensive news story in there on it.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah. It was truly...
Was it a cylindrical object or...
Well, that was one of the descriptions that some of the witnesses called it cylindrical. Others said that it looked like a piece of junk. Okay, we're going to go to Ron in Thousand Oaks, who's calling in from Ventura Cable. Ron, good evening.
Good evening. Good evening. How are you guys tonight?
Just fine.
Great.
Yeah. I have a question. What is the big cover-up? I mean, what is the government afraid of?
Larry?
Well, if you want my opinion, it all deals with technology, from what I've seen in the 30 years. My feeling is that the mentality was in the earlier years from the Roswell event up was the mentality was that the first person who can duplicate this type of technology would have air superiority over the world, and I believe that mentality still goes today, even though the Iron Curtain has fell. I believe there's spin-offs occurring from the technology from alien craft that have crashed. It sounds like, saying a statement like that sounds way off the wall. But from what I've seen in the investigations in 30 years that I'm doing, it all points in that direction.
But even governments that are hostile to each other, you know, it's like a mutual cover-up, you know.
Well, yeah, because, the Russians were working along the same lines as we were.
Uh-huh.
There's no doubt about that. I mean, that's being shown in what's released, what's being released from behind the Iron... Well, there's no Iron Curtain today, but what's being released from Russia today, they were going the same direction our government was going in.
There's also the... Don broke the story about the Brookings Institution back in the 60s, in which the government literally hired the Brookings Institution to develop a protocol. They said, well, society would crumble. Society would disappear if the civilization became aware of a higher form of intelligence operating in our skies. And I think that they basically have been operating on that principle, that they cannot allow their own authority to be undermined. That they, if there is a higher authority, then you don't look to the government. You look to that higher authority, and it's like in Clear Intent. When these objects can move at will into secured air secured areas, and we can't do anything about it. Well, what does that say?
Yeah, who's going to want to keep paying
$4 trillion.
billion dollars in national defense in taxes if all that
right.
money wouldn't protect us from anything.
Everything
right.
comes down to faith.
Well, it didn't look like you know, they had much control over anything here in Southern California with the earthquakes and the fires and the riots and everything else that went on. You know?
Yeah.
So much less with the UFOs. In the mid-60s, was there any data of a UFO sighting in the state of Nebraska? Because
in the
I believe I saw one in the mid-60s.
Well, I'm sure there were. Nothing immediately pops to my mind.
Yeah.
Larry, does anything pop in yours?
Mid-60s? No, not really.
Yeah.
There are a lot of books that deal with anecdotal cases in the United States. I mean, they cover cases for the last 50 years.
Right.
And I mean, there are tons of them in paperback and in your local bookstore. So
one case does pop to my mind. It was not 60s, though. It was in the 50s. Kehoe mentioned it in one of his books that he wrote in the mid-50s. And as a matter of fact, if my memory serves me, it was a rather famous case. But look, we're at the bottom of the hour. We've got to move along. Ron, thank you for your call.
Thanks for calling.
Larry, we're going to have to take another quick break, so please hold on. Stand by. My name is Don Ecker. The show is UFOs Tonight. You have been listening to our special guest, and he's going to be on here for another half hour, Mr. Larry Fawcett, who, along with Barry Greenwood, wrote one of the definitive books on the UFO phenomenon, previously called Clear Intent, now known as the UFO Cover-Up. Mr. Dwight Schultz is helping us move this project right along, and we will be back after these words. UFOs, are they real? Or are they Memorex? Larry Fawcett, what's your answer?
I didn't hear part of what you said. The phone cut off. Or something.
UFOs, are they real or are they Memorex?
You bet your life they are real.
Let's go back to the phones. We've got Deborah from Little Rock joining us on Jones.
Good evening, guys.
Hey, Debbie, how's it going?
I got myself a little cold, so I have to hurry up before I sneeze.
Okay.
First of all, I have a message from Adam from MUFON. He was your timekeeper a couple Thursdays ago.
Uh-huh.
He says that Salmon's cable dropped CRN.
Yeah, I had some calls this past week that Salmon's wasn't carrying the show the last couple of weeks.
Huh.
So for any of you folks out there that want to see UFO Tonight continue on Salmon's, give those folks at Salmon's a call, or during the week, call us here at CRN at 818-352-7152 and raise Kane, see what the story is.
Okay, and then I have a question for Larry.
Yes, ma'am.
What's your take on the abduction phenomenon?
That's kind of a sour note with me, actually. I've investigated a couple of cases. There's one I like very much, but unfortunately the case turns out like a religious type of thing. Not because it didn't happen, but I believe the woman 100%. That she's telling the whole story. In fact, I worked on that case for about 9 years for another author by the name of Raymond Fowler.
You must be talking about the Andreessen case.
That's correct. Mm-hmm. I used every police tactic I knew in interrogation in all the schools I've been in to grill this woman night and day. I'd call her 3 o'clock in the morning and question her.
You didn't bring a rubber hose, did you?
No, but I would call her and wake her up out of sound sleep and ask her a question. Unfortunately, when you're searching for the truth, you have to do some crazy things.
Yeah.
And this woman stood up to 9 months of scrutiny by me, and she would do anything. If I asked her to take a polygraph, she would, a voice stress evaluation. I mean, she was so willing to help to get to the bottom of this thing. And I believe 100% that she was telling a true story. It sounds like Alice in Wonderland sometimes if you read the case, the Andreessen affair. But maybe there's other reasons why it's coming out this way.
Hey, well, I guess I'll get the book and read it. Okay, I'll see you guys later.
Okay, bye. Debbie, you have a good weekend, my dear.
All right, you too.
Okay, bye bye. Larry, let me ask you something. And the Andreessen case is a great place to start.
Right.
One thing in this field that tremendously, it's bothered me over the last number of years. And I'm not going to mention any names, but I see a number of researchers that previously I had great respect for go from being true in-depth investigators to being advocates for a particular case. And refusing to re-examine the evidence, no matter how far off track these people have gotten. I mean, looking at it from an independent viewpoint, you can see where the investigative technique has stopped and the advocacy has begun. What do you think causes that?
I don't know. I could tell you what caused it with me with the Andreessen case. There was a lot of things that weren't put down into the book that occurred that I seen with my own eyes. I couldn't dispute what I was seeing. With that case there alone, during the hypnotic session, there were balls of light that went from one wall to the other, which was witnessed by about 8 people that were there. I mean, it was amazing what was going on. The poltergeist, I'll call it poltergeist experiences.
Paranormal phenomena.
Yeah, paranormal phenomena that was occurring while this woman was under hypnosis was unreal. There was a point in her story where she talks about being put on this device that spun, sort of like a centrifugal force machine. While this was happening, she was sinking down into the chair, her face distorted, her nose went over to the side as if there was great pressure on her. Things like
you
that.
You witnessed this.
I did. Fred Max, there was a doctor there. Like I said, there was about 7 people in the room while this was taking place. Another strange thing, I'll tell you about this case. I had, every night I was taking the transcripts of the hypnotic sessions home with me and typing them out for Ray Fowler. This one night we were there and the structure of the hypnotic session dealt with how did they get from the planet to here with their propulsion systems. And then we couldn't get through on this because whoever was controlling her in her hypnotic state was telling her that they didn't want to bring this forth. Well, anyway, I, prior to going into that session that night, had stopped at Radio Shack and picked up a tape from my tape recorder, a Memorex tape. And when I got there, I opened the box up, I put it into my machine. Fred Max, the hypnotist, had a reel-to-reel going. Of his tape recording, and Betty's husband had a tape recorder also that was going. Well, anyway, she began telling the portion of the drive system for the aircraft, and for the disc itself, and how they work and what elements they use. At the end of this, the being through her says that none of this information is going to be saved. Anyway, you know, people are just, whatever devices you're using to record this thing, it ain't going to happen. Well, anyway, after the session was over, for some reason I never played my part back that night, and neither did Fred Max turn the reel back on, or Bob. I got home about 2 hours later, I popped this thing into the machine to type it, and I got all kinds of space music on the tape.
Space music?
Space music. 2001. Close Encounters of the Third Kind, Star Trek, it was just crazy. It was all space kind of music. So I said, what the devil is this? You know, it was a brand new tape. So I called Fred Max, and I said, Fred, something happened to my machine here, and I didn't get the session tonight. Did you have an AM, an FM radio going somewhere or some type of thing that was playing music? And he said, no, let me turn my tape on. So I'm listening over the phone. He turns it on, bang, he's got the same thing. So I immediately called Bob Luca and asked him to play the tape over the phone for me, and that's exactly what he had on there, too. So there were some crazy things that took place during this case here.
That's the kind of stuff that could truly make you paranoid.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go back to the phones.
I have to tell you one more thing on this case, which is very important because it fits into the UFO field with the mysterious helicopters. I never had overflights of helicopters in my property in Connecticut at all. Until I got involved with the Andreessen affair. I mean, I was having low-level passes over my house. They would hover. They would shine searchlights on my house. It was unbelievable. I used to call my cruisers up. You know, as a lieutenant, I said, bring the cruisers up here. I got some type of helicopters up here. And 3 or 4 of the cars would see them, too. You know, it was just crazy.
Well, you know, it's funny you should mention that because right before the show tonight, I was upstairs. And as I was standing up there, a helicopter was continuously circling around the parking lot here of the mall. Now, I presume it was LAPD, but I couldn't tell. Let's shoot
yeah,
up
but
there.
But it had a big hot dog hanging down from it, Don. I mean,
yeah, but, you know, this was happening, and I was seeing it from my own eyes, you know.
Well, can I just say, I have to say, well, this is the skeptical part coming out of me. I've worked with a lot of magicians. And I had a friend, he's very famous, and when I used to work at a theater back east, I would walk around listening to cassettes and music all the time, and this guy would switch my cassettes without my knowing it. He did it as a joke all the time, and he used to work with this, I'm not going to give his name away, he used to work with Sly Deeney. But there are, this is the kind of stuff that the Amazing Randy does. And think about it, you know, that you've got Star Wars music. Now, if some entity was going to wipe your tape out, why would they put Star Wars
you
music
got
on?
Me. That's,
but
that's
but somebody
me.
But somebody trying to, I mean, it's like knocks under the table and, you know, violins floating in the air.
Yeah.
Somebody working to try to convince you of something, it's like it's a neat gimmick to prove to you, because it's, you go home, you don't play the tape, you go home and you get Star Wars music, but not the, well, and then you remember that during the tape you weren't going to get this.
Right.
And then you have to go back and you have to remember who was in the room and what the lights were like during the hypnosis section and who was who. I mean, and where was everybody?
Well, we searched every bit of that house after that session when the lights were going back and forth. We couldn't come up with anything.
No.
It was unbelievable. This was happening over the woman's head. It was it was really unbelievable.
Let's go back to the phones, because I've got a bunch of phone calls here. We're going to go to Eagle Rock, where Jim has been waiting on there on Century. Good evening, Jim.
Hi, Don. Hi, Dwight.
Hey, Jim.
Hi, Larry.
How you doing?
Okay. I have two questions to ask real quick, but one aside, that Orange County sighting last night or yesterday?
Right.
The one engineer who saw it, he made a quote that's got to go down in UFO history. The reporter asked him, "Do you think it was extraterrestrial?" And he said, "No, nobody'd fly a piece of junk like that across space." That's got to go down as the best thing I ever heard. Let's see. Anyway, was Clear Intent or the new issue, was that ever out in a hardcover?
Yes, it was. Clear Intent didn't, when it first came out, was in hardcover.
Yeah.
The soft cover book is the UFO cover up.
Yeah. That's a good book, my favorite book.
Thank you very much.
And what's your new book called?
I haven't titled it yet. I'm only into three chapters in it. There's going to be some, you know, things that I've never told before. I've told a few people, Don knows. That people are really going to sit back and say, wow, you know.
Well, I'll look forward to it.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Okay, Jim. Thank you, my friend.
Bye.
Okay, we've got 1 minute before we've got to take another break. When I come back, I'm going to go to Alexandria, Virginia. We've got Lou waiting on there from Media General. But before we do that, Larry, we got to take the last break of the evening.
Okay?
Okay. And when we come back, we're going to finish up UFOs tonight. The phone lines are still lit up from end to end. And, boy, I'll tell you, I personally, and Dwight, I think you'll agree with me, I could go on another 2 hours.
This is a great show.
This definitely is a great show, a great guest. And we'll do that right after these words. And we are back for the last 15 minutes. Larry, let's go to Alexandria, Virginia. We've got Lou hanging on there. Lou, good evening and welcome to UFOs Tonight.
Good evening, Don. I had a question relating to something you had on your program a couple of weeks back.
Okay.
But, before I get to that, I just want to mention that there's been a couple of books in that Andreessen Affair since the original. The most recent, I believe, is called The Watchers by
Ray Fowler. Yes.
And he brings things further.
Ray's been a guest on this program.
Yeah, he's a very good guest.
Ray was a guest on this program. We had quite a fascinating discussion.
My question was about the reports you had of the supposed good quality video of the UFOs at Pine Bush, New York. And I was wondering if you had seen that or if you knew any of the details of it.
You're talking about the video that Dr. Bruce Cornett was discussing before?
I believe that's it.
I saw excerpts from this video. Cornett was down in Orlando at Disney World, and he played excerpts from this video there. There were some very interesting things in on the video itself. Now, as to what they are or what they represented is anybody's guess. But Cornett identified them as truly unidentified objects.
I was curious if they were merely lights moving or whether there was something more substantial.
Yeah. They were shot at night, and you could certainly see the lights that were on the craft or on these objects. But as far as what the detail was in the background, I personally could not say. Now, perhaps with the right equipment and the right photographic techniques, more could be learned from these. But I'm certainly not in the area where I could do something like that. I don't have the background or the experience.
Well, the reason I ask is Ellen Crystal in her book, Silent Invasion, mentioned that it was very difficult to get photographs other than the lights.
Yes.
Because of technology used to mask the
Well, Bruce Cornett has worked with Ellen Crystal on this. As a matter of fact, he originally sought Ellen Crystal out when he heard about these happenings at Pine Bush.
I see. Okay.
All right.
I was just wondering if anything more is known on Project HARP as well.
Larry?
Hello?
Yeah. Do you know anything about Project HARP?
No, I haven't heard of that.
As I recall, you mentioned that was an effort underway to burn the extent of subterranean excavations, tunneling, and so on.
Well, we're going to be also doing a show in the very, very near future with Richard Souter about that type of technology and some plans that the government have made in the past. And in the new issue of UFO Magazine, there's going to be a story by Souter on that technology. All right, Lou, thank you very much. We've got to move along. We are going to go to Sherman Oaks. We have Jonathan waiting on CVI. Jonathan, good evening.
Hi, guys. How you doing?
Just fine.
Good evening.
Yeah, I know we're running out of time, so I'll just get through my questions real quick. Larry.
Yes.
You know you were talking about the balls of light flying around the room and everything.
Right.
I mean, this might be far-fetched, but could it be some form of, like, I don't know, paranormal stigmata? You know how sometimes people who say they were abducted and used in demonic rituals sometimes have scars form on them under hypnotic regression.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think it could be something like that?
It could have been. I really don't know. I know it was happening because I saw it with my own eyes.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear.
I said it could be, but I know it was happening because I saw it with my own eyes. What I saw with that woman contorting her face like that on the hypnosis.
Yeah, I'm sure it must have been really
intense. And, you know, when we took her out of the leather chair, there was the imprint of her body. She was pushed down so hard.
Hmm. That's very interesting stuff. Real quick, when you submit letters for like, an FOIA request,
right,
and they say you have to say you're willing to pay for the work that the government's going to do.
Yeah.
This is the U.S. government, and before I send a letter, I'd like to know, you know, what kind of money are you looking at?
Well, one time I filed a request with NORAD when they were responding to requests, and we asked for uncorrelated sightings from them, and got a letter back. It was one of our researchers, Todd, got a letter back stating that it would take 18,000 man hours at a cost of $250,000. Please make the check out to NORAD.
Oh, you got it. I'm kidding.
I mean, they can go to exorbitant fees to keep you away from these things.
That's bogus.
and then there's no guarantee that you'll get anything
usable. Right.
You
say that in a sentence.
And, I love how when you see the documents that are released, there's like two lines you can read, and then everything's been gone over with like a black magic marker.
Yes.
It seems ridiculous to even release the document in the first place. Real quick, before we run out of time, Montauk Project, fact or fiction? Have you read the books?
No, I haven't.
Anybody?
Fiction. 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 Fiction.
Darn good fiction.
Yeah.
By golly, it was quite a romp.
Yep.
And the new issue of Omni just came out. I haven't read it. I just picked it up, and they have a whole thing about investigating UFO sightings. And I just want to know, what do you think of Omni as it relates to UFOs? Do you feel it's biased in any way, or do you feel it's pretty neutral?
Who are you speaking
anybody,
to?
Anybody, Dwight, Don, Larry, Vicky, whoever wants to answer.
Well, I think they had been biased against for a long time, but they've jumped on the bandwagon here recently because there seems to have been some legitimacy in the media and money. They've sort of turned the bend. You've heard a lot from UFO advocates in the last 7 months.
Yeah.
So they've sort of changed their tune. And of course, James Oberg is on the front cover every issue.
I've written some stories for Omni in the past. They've paid me for them. And when I did the stories, regardless on what it was, they always demanded of me in the past to get the skeptical point of view, no matter how ludicrous. But now they've seemed to open up their editorial policy quite a bit. Hey, we've got to move along.
Right,
thank
well,
you for your call,
you
Jonathan.
Sure. Bye-bye.
We're
going to
go to Dave in Ukiah on TCI.
Good evening, everybody, and I hope you're having a good evening.
Good evening. Oh, great one, Dave.
Wonderful, wonderful show. By the way, Don, it's fine with me and probably everybody else listening if you want to go till 1 o'clock because we don't need that rock and roll music on CRN. or 3 in the morning in the East Coast. Couple of things. The first thing is that Larry Fawcett, is that correct?
Yes.
When you were talking about the Loring incidences, and not only Loring, I did read your book, and also the Russian bases, do you think there's any, in your own opinion, that this could have been the reason why the communist government and the American government are no longer mortal enemies and why the missiles are all being destroyed?
That could be. I really don't know. There's no indications in the government documents that that's the reason, but that could be. Who knows?
I don't think Zhirinovsky would agree with that. Did you? I don't know whether you heard the latest story. He was being interviewed in Playboy magazine and was, let's say, asking the reporter, Miss Gould, to partake in some rather unfortunate, illicit activities with he and his guards. Yes.
Do you have any other calls, Don? Don,
yeah,
do you have
I
any
sure
other
do.
Calls on hold?
Yes, I sure do.
Okay, I'll get out of here.
Okay,
right.
Bye-bye. Thanks a lot. We're going to go to Wes in Studio City on Century. Wes, good evening.
Hi, Don. It's I listen to you every Saturday. I think your guest, Larry, hit the nail right on the head when he said that artifacts are the most important items in this situation. And we listened to Roswell week after week after week. And you told everybody that you'd met some guy at the museum and he had a piece of artifact and whatever happened to that?
Well, I'll tell you what. I'm gonna let Dwight relay this story.
Well, listen. That's this gentleman who was there at Roswell basically got lost, and we got in touch with his family, and his family, the daughter in particular, was in tears, and we helped find him. Don did basically. Don helped to get him back. Every member of the family knew that the old man had a piece of the flying saucer he called the Rock. They all called the Rock, and it was around there, and they all knew it, and they all talked about it to us, like, because they didn't know really who we were, or what they, but they said, yeah, the Rock, it was there on the television, it was there. But we thought he was crazy. We thought he was just a silly, drunken old man. And there's a photo of it on a television or something, and we went down and we went through the attic of this old house and we searched everywhere, and when his wife died, he left. He just left everything, and the stuff was scattered. It was bug infested. We had bites all over our bodies. But it's somewhere down there. It's somewhere in that old house. We couldn't find it. But all the members of the family had seen it, had talked about it, and we couldn't find it. And it's like,
yeah,
chasing ghosts.
We had turned around literally like turning on a dime when we got back from Roswell and shot down to Texas And we had a series of adventures like you wouldn't believe. I didn't believe it when I got back. No. You know, it took me 2 months to get over that trip.
But this, the daughter was in tears talking, and we were very, I think, callous to ask her, but have you seen this thing? And while she's crying, she would say, yes, I have seen it, and I know it's there, but we thought he was just a silly old man. And you go crazy. You absolutely go nuts, and you can't find it. And you, everything that could possibly stand in your way of just touching this thing. And there's a photograph with it. And
do you have the photograph?
No,
it's back. They have it. They have the photograph.
It's their photograph.
It's theirs. It's all theirs. And
it seems an important clue, and
but there are others.
You can't find it.
There's got to be.
Well, that tells us one thing, that there are pieces around.
Yeah.
That's what you guessed. Larry said. He said there. You know, obviously people picked up.
Mr. Gonzalez said it. He said everybody was picking. He took the biggest piece. That's what he said. So there were quite a few people taking pieces of this stuff.
Yeah, they were out there on their hands and knees picking this this debris up. Well, Wes, we've got to move along.
Okay,
we're almost out of time, but
yeah,
thank you for your
curious.
Call.
Bye-bye.
Sure.
We're going to go to Santa Monica. We've got Ed joining us on Century Cable. Ed, good evening.
Good evening. What a great show tonight.
Well, thank you.
I have a question for Larry. He had mentioned that he had helicopter flyovers at his house. And I was wondering if... have there been any other, having such a high profile, have there been any other repercussions from governmental agencies in his work?
No, I did have an incident that occurred when the MJ-12 documents hit the streets, if you're aware of them. Somebody had sent anonymously a letter to one of my investigators, Jim Lemming, which was addressed to me. Lemming sent it on to me, and when I opened it up, it was a teletype marked Top Secret. And the teletype, which was all coded, you couldn't read it, but the top lines read something or other numbers, and then it said, refer to MJ-12, blah, 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 blah. At that time, the Walker spy case was really in full bloom at that time, and I says, maybe it's the government playing games here. So I placed a call to Noel Lawrence at the FOSOSI in Washington and told him that I had... a memo in my possession that I didn't get legally under the Freedom of Information Act. It was mailed to me. And I wanted to know if it was a factual document. He said, well, read the first line to me. You know, you don't have to go into the text, because I couldn't read it anyway. It was all coded. And when I read the first line, he says, okay, I'll have somebody get down to you about this. I hung up the phone, put on my uniform, went to work. About 2 hours later, there was a gentleman from OSI at my office down at the police department. Wanting the message. We gave it to him. He then told me that he would be back with a secrecy document that he wanted me to sign, and asked me if I had any other copies of this thing. And I told him to take a secrecy document and then let the door hit him in the rear when he went out. As far as other copies of the things, we told him we didn't have any.
Well, thank you very much.
Okay, Ed, you bet. Dwight, you had something.
Larry, I just wanted to know really quick. Have you seen or heard of the document that Milo Spiriglio came up with, the Marilyn Monroe document, which had MJ-12 on it also?
No, I didn't see that.
Well, you're going to want to tune in to the brand new issue of UFO Magazine. Because
I always do.
We've got a story in there. Larry, we are almost out of time.
We're out of time. Thanks very much.
It went by too fast.
Yes. Don Ecker Live.
Well, that was Larry King, and we definitely are out of time. That's our special notice telling me that I better wind it up quick. This has been a fascinating 2 hours, Larry. I want to thank you for coming on.
Great show, Larry.
And I want to ask you, can we get you back soon?
Sure, anytime.
Okay,
be
great.
Be glad to do it.
And
thanks for having me.
Oh, hey, it was great, and we certainly, can you give us a quick idea of when your new book may be ready?
I'm shooting for the beginning of next year. I'm waiting for a government document to come back to me, and they're giving me a hard time on it. I think it's going to be a long process on this certain document I'm looking at, but I'm hoping for sometime in the beginning of next year.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, if you have not read it, I strongly suggest get it. The UFO Cover-Up by Lawrence Fawcett, Barry J. Greenwood, formerly known as Clear Intent, and the publishers again real quick.
Simon & Schuster, Fireside.
Okay, fantastic. Larry, thank you so much. Stay on the line for just a moment. I'll be right with you. That's it for another week, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Don Ecker. Joining me in studio, Mr. Dwight Schultz, to help this process move along. You've been listening to UFOs Tonight, heard here on the Cable Radio Network each week, Saturday evenings from 9 until 11 o'clock p.m. Pacific Time. We'll be back in a week. Remember, we love you. Keep your eyes to the skies.
God bless.
Here's the music.